Locked On Jazz for the 28th of August. We start our points gained offensive breakdowns of the Western Conference now that all moves are done. Who looks good? Who doesn't? We look at some of the top teams alphabetically: Denver, Dallas, Clippers, Lakers. Plus, we look back to see whether last year's points gained was worth anything at all. And Andy Larson joins us to talk about the Jazz offseason, a disaster averted, and what he sees coming as we look ahead. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow!
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. And today is geeky numbers to the nth degree. So hopefully you're ready for that. Today's show is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliable, low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. We are free and on all platforms for you. If you have not subscribed on YouTube yet, feel free. If you're comfortable just getting the podcast every day on your Spotify, Stitcher, Odyssey, Apple, wherever, Google, then do it and just follow us along. Thank you very much. Hope you're doing great. All right, so points gained is my offensive metric that looks at a combination of the ability to get a possession, use a possession, as well as the efficiency that you do use the possession. So if you're a high possession user and you're able to do it efficiently, you get rewarded. If you're a high efficiency guy, but you don't use very many, you get less rewarded. I do think there's a great value in to be able to use possessions, though fundamentally, the premise behind this is that negative offensive players, players that are below average, crush your team at a very high level, much more than anyone realizes. A roster of above average players is the goal. If you can have everyone on your roster be above average, that's what we want. And if you can find a way to have a roster that if you have a negative player, you don't want to, he's a low possession user. He might bring you something else. But the concept generally is that one, your high volume players better be above average. They'll be rewarded for it. When someone forces the ball out of their hands, do you still have an average or above average possession? This system is not perfect. We don't really have a good defensive metric yet. I'll try to fiddle around with that as the week goes on with you, and we'll kind of predict, guys. The way we're going to do it this year is I'm going to take you through each team, give you what their rating is. One day we'll get to a certain amount, then Wednesday we'll get to more, Friday we'll get to more. Probably next week we'll finish it out and kind of have the prediction set on how it works. Andy Larson will join us for segments 2 and 3, so that's why we're only doing a little bit of it today. Looking back at last year, we did all right. Like I tweeted out on November 27th, the Phoenix Suns come out as the number one offensive team by a considerable amount. The only rotation players that are below average offensive players are Javon Carter and Jay Crowder, and they're very close to average. Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and CP3. This will be the best offense in the West. It wasn't quite the best offense in the West, but it was the team we had projected to be the number one seed in the West, which nobody else had. And it was exactly because of what I'm talking about. If everybody on your team is above average, you're really, really good. And guess what? That's exactly what Phoenix did this year. And while people didn't quite understand it and why they'll probably be good again this next year, is that everyone on their team is above average. Phoenix is not a team we're going to get to today. But if you just look back at them so you understand points gained, last year, and you look at their roster, Cameron Johnson was -0.1. Dario Saric was -0.1. It's done as a per-game statistic. So on a given night, Mikal Bridges uses 10 scoring opportunities. He's a positive 1.9, which means he scores 1.9 points more than the average player in the NBA would with those 10 possessions. That's awesome. He's a 1.9. The only players on that roster that were negative, Javon Carter was -0.2. Frank Kaminsky was -0.3. Etuan Moore was -0.5. Tayshaun Alexander was -0.4. They didn't play. Jalen Smith, -0.3. When it got to playoff time, Booker, not amazing, positive 0.6. Chris Paul, 0.8. DeAndre Ayton, 1.8. Kel Bridges, 1.9. Jay Crowder, even. Cameron Johnson, Dario Saric, all basically even. That's great. The Utah Jazz had as good an offense as just about anyone. And when you looked at them, that was the same concept. Other than Jordan Clarkson, everybody on that roster was positive. So that's what you're looking for. It is really brutally hard to overcome negative possessions. Negative possessions hurt your team dramatically. So when you add Russell Westbrook and you add Carmelo Anthony, you're not going to be good. That's the facts. And we'll get to it. All right. So, by the way, our other prediction last year on that, the Utah Jazz came out as the second best offensive team in the West. If Donovan Mitchell can be more efficient than he was last year, Mike Conley can turn to Memphis level. This team has an upside on its second best offensive ranking to be the best in the NBA. Oh, nailed that. Totally nailed that. Now, we weren't perfect, by the way. we had New Orleans too high. I thought the Rockets would be able to hold together. They obviously broke the team up, so we never found out. I think they actually made a mistake in that. Denver was too low on our system. Denver has a tendency to continually show up too low on our system. I think because they don't turn it over and they get a bunch of offensive rebounds, and so they get extra possessions, and so it makes them look better. I had the Lakers as the ninth best offensive team in the West, and everyone ripped on me before. They were the 12th best offensive team in the West last year. We had the Golden State Warriors as the 10th best offensive team in the West last year. Everybody ripped on me. They were the 11th best offensive team in the West. So we nailed some of that. We had the Thunder at 15, which in fact they were. We had Minnesota at 14th, which in fact they were. We had the Grizzlies at 13th. They finished 9th. Denver, we blew it. We had them at 12th. They were 4th. That was a mistake. And Dallas, I had at 8th. Everyone thought that was crazy. They came out at 6th. But basically the same, we basically nailed that. Portland came out as the number one offensive team in the West. We only had them at 6th. They do seem to overdo it because they don't turn the ball over either. All right, so let's go this year. We'll start with the first few teams, and we'll start with Dallas, and we'll look next year. Then we'll keep going down. Dallas, Denver, Golden State, Clippers, Lakers. We won't get to them all today because Andy Larson coming up here in a minute, but we'll get to some more for you on Wednesday. So let's start with Dallas, take a look at their roster. Luka is their primary possession user. I equalize everybody to 100 scoring opportunities a night. Luka's a plus 0.7. Then Kristaps Porzingis a plus 0.3. Tim Hardaway a plus 0.5. Reggie Bullock plus 0.6. This gets pretty good. Jalen Brunson 0.9. Dorian Finney-Smith plus 6. So their primary possession users are all positive. Maxi Kleber 0.4. Trey Burke comes in at negative 0.3. We'll see whether he plays or not. Nico Melli, I have out of their rotation. Josh Green, I have basically out of their rotation. Sterling Brown, who they added, is 0.3. Here are the Dallas Mavericks. Do it. They have put together a team around Luka with Josh Richardson being moved, where every single person on this roster and everyone I have projected to be using possessions for this upcoming year are positive possession users. Josh Green, I have as getting a little bit of action this year. I probably don't need to have him. He may be out of the rotation again, frankly, and could probably move his possessions to somewhere else. And then they become even better. And Luka is not incredible, but he's high volume positive. And that's really what you need, is high volume positive player in their scoring opportunities for this team. So that is going to be this Dallas Mavericks team peaks out right now in some of the areas. Trey Burke, again, is the only player, and we'll see whether or not Jason Kidd wants to use him that way or not, but they are a plus 4.5 overall on teams and their offensive metrics. So that'll put them in the upper echelon. We'll find out when we do Phoenix and we do Utah and we do the Clippers of where they fit. So Dallas is plus 4.5 on their points gained. Let's take a look at Denver today before we get to Andy Larson and give you these two teams. I have assumed that Jamal Murray will not play. I was listening to Matt Moore, Locked On Nuggets. They kind of are optimistically talking about after All-Star break. I have Jamal Murray as not playing this year. ACLs have become 12-month injuries. If in fact it's a 12-month injury, it gets late enough that I don't think he ends up playing. So let's look at Dallas. Or let's look at Denver and how they come out with the moves they've made. So Jokic is Obviously, the kingpin. He was amazing last year. He went from 0.7 points gained to 3.1 in his MVP year. Just remarkable. Michael Porter Jr., who's going to have a massive increase in possession usage and scoring opportunities, was a plus 2.6. They have two of the best points gained offensive players in all of the NBA in Denver. Will Barton, minus 0.8. Aaron Gordon, minus 0.6. Monty Morris is a zero. PJ Dozier, who I think will increase role, minus 1.1. Austin Rivers, minus 0.3. What are all of these negative players doing around such dynamic, fabulous, incredible offensive players like Nikola Jokic and Michael Porter? This is terrible. This is terrible. If Denver could put together more average offensive players, more Jamichael Green, frankly. They added Jeff Green, who last year was a 0.9 positive. That'll be great for them. But Denver will come out well at a 4.9, but driven entirely by Jokic and Porter. Can they be so good that Will Barton gets positive, that Aaron Gordon can get positive? If they do, Denver's going to be amazing. But right now, without Jamal Murray, they have too many possessions going to negative players. I have Will Barton using 10 even possession scoring opportunities. Aaron Gordon, 9 or 10. Monty Morris is even, so that's great. PJ Dozier at about 8. So that's going to be a real issue for Denver, but that's going to be the key to Denver. They've got two of the most dynamic offense, productive offensive players in Michael Porter Jr. and Nikola Jokic. If the two of them get it together at all, with the rest of the crew and make their lives easier and give them easy possessions, and those guys are efficient, Denver's going to be amazing. Denver actually comes out at a positive 4.9, which is better than Dallas's 4.5, but those will be two of the best ratings you can see. The Clippers will be up there. The Jazz will be up there. The Suns will be up there. I don't think Golden State's going to be there. I think the Lakers are going to come out terribly. We'll find out all those things for you on Wednesday. Andy Larson, day two, coming up next. Today's show is brought to you by my good friends at Murdoch Hyundai, located at 4646 South State Street, also located in Logan and in Linden. The Murdochs do a great job. They've been in Utah for over 80 years, have established themselves, embedded themselves with Utah and the culture and who we are. Their family takes such amazing pride in making sure that your customer service is out of this world. That's why they call it the no regrets experience with Murdochs. And we're going to set you up, whether it's with our good guy, Josh down at Linden, whether it's with Mr. Creech, the skier, Jason at the Murray store, or up in Linden. We've got a VIP salesperson waiting for you. So if you're going to head down to Murdoch and check out the Sonata, the Elantra, the incredible SUVs with the Kona, all the way to the beautiful Palisade and the Santa Fe's in the middle, make sure you email me first at dlock09@gmail.com. That's dlock09@gmail.com. And if you've already got your Murdoch Chevy, or your Murdoch Hyundai, and you want to work on it, oh, listen to that segue, which I kind of screwed up. You can save time and money by using rockauto.com. Why choose to spend 30 or 50 or 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or a car dealership? You can get a Honda Odyssey fuel pump for $353 at a chain store if you want to, or you can just go to rockauto.com, where they have been helping do-it-yourselfers for 20 years, and get it for $216. Rock Auto's prices are reliably low for every customer. They have everything you need, from brake parts to tail lamps to motor oil and even new carpet. So stop by rockauto.com, find out, go to the old school, easy to navigate website. You'll feel like you've gone back in time a little bit. They're not wasting money on marketing. They're not making money on those kind of things. They're giving you deals. So you get amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Write Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us box. That's Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us box with Rock Auto. Day two with Andy Larson of the Salt Lake Tribune. Here's a funny one. Andy, I didn't know that you were such a coffee nut that I don't want to give it away, but like you have Java in one of your like personal email addresses. I didn't know that you were in the David Locke like coffee world the way I am.
See, and I've gotten that before, and I have to say that I have to disappoint you. The Java there is the computer language Java, and I set up that email address when I was like 12 years old, and in my computer science class as a seventh grader and learning Java, right? So That's that's why my email address has Java all these years later.
When I was in seventh grade, when I was in seventh grade, this is how old, like I'm on a kick here about how old I am. But so when I was in seventh grade, so what are you, 13? Seventh grade, is that about right? 13?
Yeah.
So the first home computer was 3 years old at that point.
Okay.
So like the I would guess that 83 is when Macintosh like blows up the world with that incredible ad. I don't know if you've gone back to see it. I'm sure you maybe have with being a little bit of a geek, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
And like, I think the whole Macintosh is probably 83. That would be my guess.
Wasn't the ad the 1984 themed one? Therefore, wasn't it 84?
Yep. So you're right. Sorry, I hadn't even, yes, you're absolutely right. I didn't put the two together that way. So I had a TRS-80 then, in which I put a cassette tape into the, to be able to say, do you know what
yeah.
Like, Andy, a cassette tape looks like.
Wait, you have one now?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh,
I do. Here I have one. Let's see. No, maybe not. This is not good. This is not a good show right now. Oh, for those of you on YouTube.
There we go.
Here's what it is. Okay. Can you read that, Andy?
No, I can't. What does it say?
It says balls and strikes, 8/23/92. This was so 1992. So this is like my first one of my probably third or fourth radio shows ever. I was very humble. If you see the neon, it says best show. So yes, I do have a cassette tape.
Now looking back on it later, is it the best show?
I have not listened to that show again.
Okay.
I have guts to do that. But maybe we'll try. We'll go over to Larson Digital and have them no relation.
No,
that Larson Digital and have them convert that for me. All right. He is Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune. I am David Locke. Thanks for tuning in. If you're listening on YouTube, you actually have some idea in watching on YouTube, you can subscribe. All of our programs are free and on all platforms. No offense. If you're going to buy local journalism, that's fine, but we're just having to be free. Okay. All right. I did a show the other day that I thought that the off season was a grand success because it was disaster averted. Like when I wrote the scenarios of like what could happen in this off season, I thought disaster was option like 1, 2, and 3. Was I being too like nervous about this? What's your thought about the off season? And we'll
from a salary point of view, is that kind of what your thought was?
You don't re-sign Mike Conley. That's a disaster. Yeah. Right? Or like at least it felt like, cause you didn't have any way to re-sign anyone else. You have to trade Joe Ingles, Bojan Bogdanovic, one of those two to be able to make things work. You can't find someone for favors and you're paying $49 million for centers. Like, seems actually 52 by the time you add Azubuike. That would have seemed like a little much. So I thought that those things could have, those were my bad case scenarios.
No, I think you're totally right. You know, the Mike Conley thing was a big deal. And I'll admit I was nervous about it the day after the playoffs ended, right? When the Jazz go into, when we do our end of season media availabilities the day after, and I'm doing it from the hotel in Los Angeles and talking to Mike Conley and Dennis Lindsay then at that time, kind of getting an idea of, hey, do you guys expect Mike Conley to be back? And asking Mike Conley that question, he didn't say, he said, hey, I love my time here with the Jazz. But he didn't say like the Jazz will be my number one priority and I'll definitely be back, or he didn't say, hey, he said, I'm excited to be a free agent and kind of test the market a little bit. And I thought that was a worrying sign, at least for someone who wants the Jazz to be good. Right. And then kind of the way that the market played out and, I think Mike,
wait, go back to Dennis. Cause I thought your point is pretty good on, if you go back and listen to Dennis, that was not a, like we, Mike Conley's coming back. We have to have Mike Conley.
Agreed. No. And Dennis, exactly. Dennis said that same thing. Is like, look, we want him, we love having Mike Conley back, but it did not sound like a sure thing whatsoever that, that this was something that they felt confident in. And so, when you get that lack of confidence from both sides, you start to worry.
It wasn't until Quinn kind of came out and like gave that like effusive. Wasn't that same day that Quinn then comes out and gives like the effusive thing about what Mike Conley meant to the team and the roster and the leadership? Like, I had the same reaction you did throughout that day. I'm listening. I'm like, whoa, like this is not like a kumbaya. We love each other. We've got to get back together. Until I think, if I remember, Quinn might have ended the day or earlier in the day. Like Quinn was the one who kind of came out and was like, Quinn had a very interesting presser, like, because it was very much, I respect my guys, I appreciate my guys, and Mike Conley's been amazing. Like,
yeah,
it was very hit. Mike, I thought Quinn's presser was very interesting that day.
I agree too, and yeah, I think Quinn was obviously all about retaining Mike Conley, and understandably so, as the obvious and kind of only way that this roster could stay as good as it was last year, right? Like, I mean, I think you're right that. I don't know how much of a difference that made in terms of Quinn being so publicly pro Mike Conley. Certainly he is behind the scenes as well, but like I was concerned about it. And so that it did happen, that the Jazz were able to retain him instead of him going to like a Chicago or Dallas, I think was huge. Obviously, I think you're right that the salary dump happened in the most palatable way. You know, yes, you lose that future first, and it is, you know, something that essentially Oklahoma City have the Jazz over a barrel because they can name their asking price, and that's just kind of the way it is. But, you know, I think Fave was clearly the guy in the rotation that, you know, making a significant amount of money that you would prefer to lose if you have to kind of choose one of the $10 million guys, right? So, and then, you know, obviously I like what they did with the draft, and I like what they did in free agency with the limited amount of money that they did have.
So one thought of the Fave's first round pick, I threw this out there. I'm actually asking if this is a crappy take or a good take. So feel free. Okay. So reverse order was, we traded a first round pick to take George Hill 1 year.
Yeah.
Well, like to some extent we traded I'm looking at it that way. Like, oh, we traded a first round pick to take George Hill for 1 year, 1 year along the way. And it was probably the right move. I don't think any of us have really ever criticized that, like it, considering their position, considering where the Jazz were in backup centers at the time, they really, in a sense, traded a first round pick for Derek Favors for a year. Like that's kind of what they did.
Yeah. I would say though, you lost the opportunity cost to do something different with mid-level in a way that you didn't with the George Hill. Okay. Right. So yep. That's the difference is, you could have done something different with the mid-level that may have helped the team in a different way, whether that's getting better perimeter defense or whatever it is, that you wouldn't have had to lose the Derek Favors pick the next year. And, you know, I think, you know, the George Hill trade is something you go into eyes open kind of knowing what the deal is like, hey, we're trading for an expiring point guard, but we need to get better because we need to impress Gordon Hayward. This was a mistake. You know, this was a mistake that they made. And yeah, I think you can look at it in terms of you gave up a first round pick for 1 year of a valuable player. But, you know, honestly, George Hill was a much better player in his 1 year with Utah than Derek Favors was when in his last year with the Jazz.
The one thing Faves did do that I think is super important is he got Rudy into those three stints. And I think the Jazz really discovered something there. That second unit with Mike Conley at the helm with Rudy Gobert was unbelievable, and that's what they lost. You could see them really miss that in the playoffs. And I think that they actually the Hassan Whiteside signing, I actually think is largely predicated on Hassan Whiteside is actually good enough that he can play these key minutes and Rudy can go back to being three stints. Whereas if you just went with Doak or you went with Tony Bradley, who frankly was available, and you could have got Tony Bradley for the minimum, you probably can't play that player against starters. Favors being able to play 4 minutes a night against starters, not always brilliantly, but well enough that you held water, allowed you to play Rudy this 5 minutes against second team. It's pretty important.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll see if Hassan Whiteside, you know, at his age, and again, Sacramento did not play him last year, right? Like they took him out of the rotation entirely by the end of the year. So we need to realize that the Hassan Whiteside move is a high risk, high reward kind of thing. But I love that because there is a high reward. And you're right that the high reward is him playing those middle minutes and capably so, and, you know, gives you something offensively, you know, that Quinn talks to him defensively and kind of makes that work. And yeah, it kind of keeps the, I agree with you completely that those Rudy minutes at the end of every quarter were hugely important for the Jazz in being so successful last year in the regular season. So yeah, I think, in terms of kind of what the backup center market looked like and how much you can do that with the center, I think Hassan Whiteside has the best chance of being that guy. And I like that signing a lot, you know, and there are a number of ways that it doesn't work out. And I love that the Jazz took the risk there.
And I love the fact that you have your money allocated correctly. You right. should have, if you have a $40 million starting center, you should have $1 million minimum backup. Like, that's the reality in this, the way money works. All right. He's Andy Larson, Hassan Whiteside, Rudy Gay. We'll talk about those signings. We'll talk about Jared Butler. Andy's big on Jared Butler. We did a podcast where I didn't like take a shot. I just contrasted my opinion to Andy Larson's love for Jared Butler.
Let's talk about it.
So we'll do that as we continue with Andy Larson on the summer interview series here on Locked On Jazz. It is fun to talk hoops with Andy Larson. Please send him a thank you at Andy B. Larson. Really enjoy his time. Thank him for taking the time with us. His COVID work has just been great this year as well. Hey, today's show is brought to you by Sweatblock. It's a Utah company. It's certainly interesting. It's a doctor-created and doctor-recommended antiperspirant that keeps you dry for up to 7 days. It has the dry shirt guarantee. If Sweatblock doesn't keep you dry, you get your money back. Featured and tested on The Rachel Ray Show by firefighters, been a bestseller on Amazon for the past 10 years, kind of quietly running around. Well, now they're out here, and your chance to get Sweatblock at 20% off at sweatblock.com with the promo code Locked On. Excessive sweating is not a great situation. It leads to embarrassing moments. Sometimes it's your high school kids. Sometimes it's adults. Sometimes it's just a moment in time, a first date or a big presentation or something. It's great to know you've got Sweat Block when that happens. It's stronger and more effective than most clinical antiperspirants. You simply apply it at night before bedtime. You go to bed the next morning, you wake up, wash, and go about your day without worrying about the sweat. Guaranteed. I know it sounds too good to be true, but if you've used Sweat Block, you'll talk about it with your friends. No more pitting out, no more ruining shirts. No more sucking the arms into the side so you don't have to raise your hand and show your stains. It's all at sweatblock.com. Promo code Locked On gets you 20% off. Today's show is also brought to you by betonline.ag. Oh, it's football season. The gridiron is here. And you get the props in the contest, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest. It's the world's largest $200,000. NFL Survivor Contest open now at betonline.ag. Plus, head to the website and use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 100% welcome bonus. You can do that at the website or the mobile. 100% welcome bonus right now with a special promo code for you. Locked On will get it for you as well. The super promo, make a bet on Thursday's September 9th, season opener between the Super Bowl champ Bucks and the Cowboys. If you lose, your wage will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up using the promo code NFL100. I mean, there are just a ton of things going on. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports, from football, basketball, boxing, to your Vegas casino games. Don't wait. Take advantage. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Hasn't it been great all week having Andy Larson with us? These are like binge listens, by the way, everybody. Like, we're putting out these shows. You can go back. Ron Boone's back from last week there. We actually had video working for a little while and then didn't. Like, come on. Like, the dude's 70. Like, give him a break. So you can send, like, go back and listen to Ron's. Please send Ron a tweet at 1041 straight and say thank you. Send Andy a thank you at Andy B. Larson for taking the time with us. We really appreciate it. You can subscribe to all these on YouTube, the David Locked On Jazz on YouTube now. Thanks. We're over 2,000 subscribers, hopefully over 3 soon and rolling. Thank you very much for that as we continue to develop this little Locked On thing that just does this thing. Mushroom effect. That's kind of weird. All right. Andy, who got better in the Western Conference?
Yeah, like not very many teams, right? Like in terms of who got better, there was a whole lot of staying still, kind of standing pat from teams that we may have thought were going to make major moves. You know, Dallas, everyone thought coming into the offseason was going to make some sort of move to change what they do. They didn't. Portland, you know, Damian Lillard could put more pressure on them as a franchise than anyone can possibly put on a general managing, you know, team. And did they make any significant moves? Not really, you know, like, so we look at the Western Conference and, you know, I think it's still determined by injury, right? Like, so Kawhi Leonard not playing for the Clippers will be a really big deal for them in the regular season next year. I don't think there's any question about that. The Lakers presumably will be more healthy this regular season than they were last regular season. So, I think that you can expect them to move up in the standings. Phoenix and the Jazz will probably, quite frankly, be less healthy than they were in last regular season. And, I understand that the Jazz had significant injuries at the end of last year with Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell, and yet still got relatively lucky from an injury point of view because of when those injuries happened. They happened in the softest part of the schedule so that the Jazz could win a whole bunch of games with Trent Forrest playing. If it's Rudy Gobert that gets hurt instead of Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell, then it's kind of a different conversation. So in terms of who got better, I don't look at the top eight teams and say, these are wildly different franchises than what they were last year.
All right, so I have two teams that I think get better.
Okay, let's hear it.
Three teams, maybe. Phoenix Suns get better.
Really? Why is that?
Because Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and Mikal Bridges all get better. They're all still in that stage of their career. Mikal Bridges especially. But then also DeAndre Ayton, I think his having a good year and understanding what a good year is makes a stride. And I think Devin Booker carrying the load through what he carried it through. Like, that's a big deal. I think they still get better.
Hey, I think Chris Paul probably gets worse.
Huh?
Chris Paul probably gets worse.
That's a big question, right? How did he get through the year injury-free? Like, we just sat around and watched all year for it to happen, then it never did. So does it finally happen?
I don't know. I mean, this is the thing with injury risk, because we're playing with percentages, right? But, he's also a over 35 point guard, and that's really tough.
And I think there's an interesting one. Do you remember a few years ago when they moved the preseason, the opening of the regular season from like Halloween to October 15th, that first year, and all the veterans were awful, like awful. Like, they had a biorhythm pattern that they were used to doing, and you just jammed it by 14 days. And these guys all started the year terribly that first year, all of them, like almost universally. Like, I'm curious to watch, like, how some of these guys start this. Like, I looked at Mike Conley at Summer League the other day, and that when he was there, was a picture of Mike Conley at Summer League. And I thought to myself, like, oh, that's the sign to him. He's come to Summer League to start getting ready. Like, but you used to do that on July 7th. You went to Summer League to go start getting ready and playing, and you kind of played with the guys, and then you really amped it up. And then by September, you were like back in the gym, and then you started in October. But we were doing Summer League on August 12th. So, like, and then they're starting camp like 6 weeks later. Like, this schedule is wacky. And I think there's going to be a pretty big impact on a bunch of these guys. Maybe Mike Conley, Chris Paul, I don't know how many years of a veteran you have to be for it to screw you up. But I think we're going to see a bunch of guys really screwed up early in the year.
Or do we see it on the tail end where guys, start reasonably well because they do have, they did have a couple months off. But then when we get to March, April, it's just the fatigue of having played 200 games over the last 20 months, whatever it is. I think it could go either way, but I agree that I think this will play a big role in what happens next season.
I think Dallas gets better.
Why is that?
Because Luka gets better.
Wow. Luka's really good, but yeah, I mean, good idea.
Becomes the best player in the league.
Okay.
Right? I mean, but it's like natural progression, right? Luka's good. And then I actually think Donovan gets better.
I agree.
Still at the stage, like we forget he's in his fourth year of the NBA. Like, he has had an unusual burden and experience level for 4 years in the league. So is Luka. And so I think Donovan makes a jump here as understanding how to be a better player this year.
I think Donovan, I agree with that. I also think Donovan's usage is going to go up this year.
All right. I'll say this with a smirk for those on YouTube. So explain what you mean by this.
I think Donovan was, and this happened last year too, and it didn't really change his regular season, but I think Donovan was so singularly good at shooting the ball in last year's playoffs I'm trying to figure out the right way to say that. I think he really wants to show that this is his team. And I think that as a result, he takes more shots and, you know, is even he's had very high usage percentages in years past. I think it's possible he gets even more heliocentric is kind of the Twitterati term for this, is that the Jazz.
He was at 33.5 last
year. No.
He jumped from taking 19 shots to taking 21. He did remarkably, by the way, increase his threes to a game while going from 37 to 39%. So that's like an amazing, like, I don't think that's been talked about enough.
Yeah.
What is this, a good or a bad thing?
I think it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, like, I think, you know, we've talked about this before. I think the version of heliocentric Donovan, in which he is taking a lot of threes and or getting into the paint and becoming a passer, are tremendous. I think when he is throwing up kind of the mid-range floaters, then it becomes pretty inefficient, right? And so it's going to be interesting to see. I do think he takes on more possessions next year. And can he, can he do it without adding those floaters to the game? I think so. But I think, quite frankly, more possessions start with the ball in Donovan Mitchell's hands than Mike Conley's next year.
Do you have data on whether that happened last year?
No. And like, this is me being an old school talking head analyst who doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, this is me looking at the way Donovan reacted to the playoffs last year and trying to be like emotional psycho reader person rather than statistical analyst. And I'm probably weaker at that, right? But like, I think maybe that's a weaker form of analysis than stats. But I think Mike Conley started a lot of possessions last year, except, you know, there were certainly those minutes in the middle of every quarter where Donovan was the guy, right? And Donovan had huge usages during those minutes. And I think that probably continues when Mike's off the floor. I think he probably just kind of shifts to where maybe it's a, I don't know if it's a 50-50 time when Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell were on the floor last year, but it might be 60-40 in favor of Donovan next year.
It's interesting. We have a lot of possessions on this roster. Like, I run a little exercise every year on, like, if everyone used their average possessions, what happens? And there's like a threshold where, like, you go over it, it's a problem. I think we'll be over it this year. Like, I think that's going to be a real story this year. There's too many. Like, Rudy Gay replacing George Niang, and then that's really it. And Hassan Whiteside probably actually uses more than Derek Favors.
For sure.
Like, I think you actually probably have a – we were right on the cusp of it last year, frankly, of having too many possessions in the group, and then they found a way to navigate it. But you also heard them all year long kind of quibble about it. Like, you heard it. Like, Joe and Mike would have this funny thing. Like, they thought it was – they talked about it like it was funny, but it was like, oh, neither of us could have a good game on the same night. Remember that night when Joe did that conference about that? Like, I thought that was like, oh, like, you're like admitting that you're navigating this game where everyone uses a lot of possessions. Like, so I think there's, I mean, it's interesting. If Donovan goes and takes another five, they got to come from somewhere. And we saw like Boyan's whole thing last year was that, like, he used to dominate first quarters while Mike Conley wasn't dominating. And then once Mike Conley asserted himself last year and dominated first quarters, Boyan didn't. When Mike Conley went out, Boyan dominated first quarters and was great.
Yeah, I completely agree that we are there of having a – the Jazz are there of having a one-ball problem, right? Like, it is a little bit true. And, you know, I think they do have tremendous efficiency from those players, and so it's not a huge deal, but maybe it is less optimal than you'd like from kind of a team-building point of view of, like, all right, you know, you can get good offense from, you know, you are wasting some efficient possessions that conceivably Mike Conley and Bojan Bogdanovic could make. Now, you know, maybe you do that. Maybe you can take possessions away from Jordan Clarkson and Rudy Gay, who are somewhat less efficient, but we'll kind of have to see how that plays out.
All right, Andy Larson, get your pencil out.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the pick and roll percentages for last season. And when we come back, you're going to tell us what they're going to be this season. Okay. None of this psychoanalyst stuff. We're going to get you back into your zone. Last year, Donovan Mitchell ran 28% of the Jazz pick and rolls. Joe Ingles ran 22% of the Jazz pick and rolls. Mike Conley ran 22% of the Jazz pick and rolls. Jordan Clarkson ran 14% of the Jazz pick and rolls. Bojan Bogdanović ran 4%. By the way, Joe Ingles and Mike Conley over the course of the season ran within one pick and roll of each other. They basically ran the exact same amount on 22%. Andy Larson tells us in the next segment what that allocation will be this season for the Utah Jazz, and I give him a theory on where I believe the NBA is going, why it's different than every other, while the league has changed, and why maybe it increases the Jazz chance to win a championship. That coming up on Locked On Jazz.